Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the closing market report for the 8th day of April. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets, of course, with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And then a bit later, an agricultural attaché from the European Union. We'll discuss the TTIP and GMO labeling, along with the history of the CAP. That's the Common Agricultural Policy, and we'll do that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
No numbers this afternoon from the CME Group as were pre-recorded. However, here's the weather forecast.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist for the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute. April is off to a cold, wet start. Temperatures have been running about 3 degrees below average so far. Meanwhile, precipitation has been near to above average for this time of year. Northern and eastern Illinois have had amounts of 1/2 to 1.5 inches, while eastern and southern Illinois have had amounts of 1/2 inches or less. The Water Survey Soil Temperature Network of 19 sites shows 2-inch soil temperatures cooling off. In the last week or two, soil temperatures range from the upper 30s in northern Illinois to the upper 40s in southern Illinois. In the shorter term, the colder weather continues. The National Weather Service forecast for Saturday morning is for lows ranging from the low 20s in the north to the low 30s in the far south. Daytime highs for Saturday will range from the low 40s in the northern Illinois to the mid-50s in far southern Illinois. Lows Sunday morning will be a little milder, ranging from the low 30s in northern Illinois to the upper 30s in southern Illinois as the colder air shifts eastward. The highs on Sunday will be in the upper 50s in northern Illinois and in the mid to upper 60s in southern Illinois. Next week will stay a little warmer with highs ranging from the upper 40s and 50s in northern Illinois and into the 60s in central and southern Illinois. There is still chances of frost on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. The next chance of significant rain is Tuesday. This is state climatologist Jim Angel.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Our term for the day is speculate. Speculation is the practice of engaging in risky financial transactions in an attempt to profit from short or medium-term fluctuations in the market value of a tradable good, rather than attempting to profit from the underlying attributes embodied in the instrument. Many speculators pay little attention to the fundamental value of a security or a commodity, and instead focus purely on price movements. Speculation can, in principle, involve any tradable good or financial instrument. Speculators are particularly common in the market for stocks, bonds, commodity futures, currencies, fine art, collectibles, real estate, and derivatives. Speculators play one of four primary roles in financial markets, along with hedgers who engage in transactions to offset some other pre-existing risk. Arbitrageurs who seek to profit from situations where fungible instruments trade at different prices in different market segments, and investors who seek profit through long-term ownership of instruments' underlying attributes. The role of speculators is to absorb excess risk that other participants do not want, and to provide liquidity in the marketplace by buying or selling when no participants from other categories are available. Successful speculation entails collecting an adequate level of monetary compensation in return for providing immediate liquidity and assuming additional risk so that, over time, the inevitable losses are offset by larger profits. And that's the definition of speculation.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason coming to you today from Chicago at the Federal Reserve Building. Mike Zuzulo joins us as usual. He's in Atchison, Kansas. And thanks so much, Mike, for being with us and taking the time. Is it cold and kind of blustery where you are today? Certainly is here.
Well, we started out cooler, Todd, but we're going to be warming up pretty rapidly. And it has been very, very windy. We're getting the tail end of some of those dust storms and wind storms coming out of the Oklahoma and Texas panhandle with some gusts that are getting up there in the 50s and 60s miles an hour, mile per hour ranges. So it's been very, very windy and has really dried us out. We got a little bit of rain this week, probably 2 to 3 tenths, but we're back to where we were before the rains came with the heating up and especially with the drying out from the winds.
So you've got a little rain, you're dry. Are you drier than you are usually at this time of year?
Well, it depends on who you ask. If you ask the USDA, they had the drought monitor this week was showing a lot less severe drought than a year ago in the heart of Oklahoma and Kansas in the wheat belt. Now, here in the western corn belt of Atchison, I would say yes, we are drier than we were a year ago. And this goes back to the crop conditions reports and how the Kansas wheat crop was only 8% very poor and poor this week compared to 23% a year ago. So between that and the really bad exports that we saw in the export sales report Thursday, you just could not get a bid in the wheat market this week. So I think there is some discussion going on right now between producers. Kansas State put out a fresh update talking about how in January only about 4% of the state was in drought. Now we're up to 93%. Not as severe, but it has been drying out. So I think we're starting to come around to the idea that maybe we are into a critical phase here.
You've long been an advocate that wheat has to lead the marketplace. Do you think that will be the case as we go through the spring months?
Yeah, I do. I think that with sub 50 million acres and you've got a hard freeze scheduled for Saturday morning in your area all the way down to Effingham and even far southern Illinois and Kentucky, and then what we're dealing with west of me in hard red wheat country, I see the supply-demand fundamentals, the weather fundamentals, all stacking up, favoring the idea that if corn really wants to let loose and break trend and put a hard long-term low in place, it's got to come from the wheat first, Todd.
All right. Now, what was driving the soybeans higher in Chicago today?
Yeah, a couple things. I think first and foremost, the row crop weather looks like it's going to dry out a little bit more in the 10-day models versus what we saw earlier this week. So I think the corn bean spreading that we saw early in the week was very much reversed on Friday's trade because of the shift in weather models. I'm also picking up from the Chicago people and the report coming out next Tuesday for the supply demand from USDA that maybe the soybean ending stocks for the United States is going to be a little bit more favorable, a little bit more price supportive, mainly because of those grain stocks report numbers from March 31st being a little bit on the light side for the soybean. So I think those are the two primary things. I'd say the third big thing is the currencies. We've got a weaker dollar against about all of the emerging market currencies. Crude oil is up 6%. Commodity-wide buying is being seen, and beans are feeling that very much, especially with the Brazilian real finding its strengthening and therefore helping the bean complex in that manner too.
Producers will be thinking to themselves on that note, especially as you look forward to that world agricultural supply and demand estimate, if USDA does cut ending stocks for soybeans. Hey, we've seen this before, and can we really ratchet the numbers down? Are you of a mind that that can happen, or still in the camp that, hey, we just have a big supply of soybeans around?
Yeah, I'm in the latter. I feel like we have an ample supply of cash beans, and it's going to be hard to get the basis to fire up for us to the upside. I made a pretty compelling argument to the clients and subscribers this week for old crop beans to start dishing them out on Monday's highs this past week around that 922 area in May beans, with the idea that if we have to buy it back, I'd rather be long in paper than and in the bin, because I do fear that both South American production supply side and Chinese demand side could be problematic for us in the soybean complex, whereas corn and beans are suffering from such a discount, there's really no risk premium. And so I do think, along with the idea that we're going to be gaining bean acres on any bean-led rallies that in the next month, you probably want to be a seller of the cash, and you could always come back and defend it if we break above 930 in lead month futures. That's what I would classify as a breakout.
What are you hearing from South America, speaking of foreign areas, about the safrinha corn crop?
I'm hearing all kinds of things, that it's on track to be a normal production, because the planting weather is not too far off track, and the weather as a whole is not too far off track. But in 2 weeks, I think that could change dramatically. And I would say that for this, from the standpoint of what kind of Argentine soybean production we may be facing as well, because it seems like Argentina and southern Brazil are the ones that are getting a little bit too much rain right now.
Hey, Michael, any other final word before I let you go for the afternoon?
I would just say to you that we want to be careful about the corn market as far as getting too negative. I can't get too negative. I know the wheat market hasn't put a low in yet, Todd, but I do think there's a pretty substantial discount in the corn at this point, and would be much more worried about the beans falling than the corn at this point.
Mike Zuzulo, of course, is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Mike, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a safe travels.
Oh, thank you, too. When we come back, we'll talk with Damian Levy. He's the first counselor and head of trade and agriculture section for a delegation from the European Union.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Damian Levy. He's the first counselor head of the trade and agriculture sector for the delegation of the European Union to the United States of America. We'll be traveling to the Federal Reserve throughout the day today. You visited the University of Illinois. Why did you come to the European Union Center here on campus?
I came here because this center has been an excellent partner of the European Union here, and they organize outreach events, and we're here to explain what Europe is about, what why it matters, and also to discover the research being done here, the teaching being done. And I've been very impressed by the startups in the research park. I've learned new things, and I think it's important that you discover things yourself. You come out of the beltway, you don't stay in your office in Washington.
What did you learn yesterday at Research Park? You met with several of the startup companies, and I'd also like to hear about your trip to Parkland Community College.
I learned about new techniques in agriculture, I mean, new things that are being developed here to make sure you use much less pesticides or insecticides or fertilizers. I think it's amazing what technology will be able to bring to farmers. And I think we have some of the same concerns in Europe that we use to make too much chemicals to farm. And I think the innovation being developed here and brought to market are very promising.
Yesterday you spoke to a group at Parkland Community College about agriculture, the United States, and the European Union. What was your primary message to them?
But the message was Europe matters a lot. Europe is a very mature market, and with the transatlantic trade and investment partnership negotiations, once we conclude, farmers will have better access to European markets. We will bring down tariff barriers, and this will allow them to compete better in Europe and so sell more products.
Again, why is it important that trade negotiations take place, that you take down trade barriers?
It's important because you bring closer two economic blocs which have been very close to each other, which have a strategic alliance in defense, and you need to strengthen that relationship in terms of uncertainty. So we have a national security reason to do this, or geostrategic reason to do this. But we first and foremost have an economic reason. It creates jobs, it creates growth, not tomorrow, in the medium term. Trade agreements are not a solution for today's problems. but they are part of a solution in the medium term, and that's why we've launched these negotiations on both sides. It's we need more growth and more jobs and better jobs, and that's why we are continuing them, and you see unanimous support among political leaders in Europe to conclude these negotiations. If this, with this administration, if possible, we would very much like to, but substance will have to prevail on timing.
Do you prefer bilateral or multilateral negotiations?
We do both. I mean, we do both. We've been a big fan of multilateral negotiation because it's good for developing countries and it's good for developed countries. It's in our DNA as Europeans to defend the World Trade Organization. We think it's part of the best instruments we have to shape globalization, which is taking place no matter what. And with agreements in Geneva with the rest of the world, the 150 countries of the World Trade Organization, we have better solutions. That's your first best solution. But it's been extremely difficult to conclude a comprehensive agreement. It's been impossible, basically, for 18 years now to conclude an agreement which is your first best solution. Then we go for second best, and the second best is trade agreements, bilateral trade agreements, like the one we're doing in the United States, like the one we're negotiating with Japan, or we concluded one with Vietnam. We are in negotiations with Mercosur, which is Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, and Uruguay. And we have concluded negotiations with Central America, Colombia, Peru. Ecuador is joining those that agreement. And we will launch negotiations with Indonesia, probably with the Philippines. We will in a month or two. So that's why we do bilateral trade agreements.
Let's turn now to genetically modified organisms, or GMO, labeling in the United States. This is a large topic, a policy debate in Washington, D.C. However, in the European Union, GMOs are already labeled. How did that come about, and what has the result been?
It came about in the 90s that consumers wanted to know whether the food products they were buying contained genetically modified organisms or not. And so it's been European law, uniform law, which is applicable in all member states of the European Union. So we've first had 15 countries applying this law, and now we have 28 countries applying the same law.
How are GMOs labeled?
It's on food product that you can buy in any supermarket. If it contains GMOs, the manufacturer has to mention it.
And do consumers pay attention to it in your mind?
I haven't seen any opinion polls on this or marketing studies whether consumers actually pay attention to it. I think that there was a request for it, and I suppose people do pay attention to it, whether there is GMOs or whether there's a claim there are no GMOs.
Let's stay with GMOs. GMO seeds in Europe, are they allowed to be planted?
We've allowed planting of GMO seeds for more than 15 years. Now, it's only been cultivated in a number of countries, also because of the soil doesn't allow it to be cultivated everywhere. It's the most sensitive aspect of GMOs. We proposed that certain countries would opt out from a European authorization, so that has become law, and so I think 15 or 16 European countries have opted out for those GMO seeds that have been authorized. But there's no ban on cultivation of GMO seeds. I think, for example, in Spain or Romania, or I think the United Kingdom, they are being cultivated.
Let's turn your attention now to a few years back, 12 years ago, when the European Union was expanded to include the Eastern Bloc nations. How has that expansion gone, looking back over that time? Has it been successful? It seems to have been.
It's been a huge success. It's been a huge success for prosperity, for democracy in these countries. I don't come from these countries, but what we have observed as European officials is that it's been hugely beneficial for them and for the European Union as a whole. We've become, in a way, bigger and stronger. Also, from a trade perspective, suddenly we've expanded from a single market of 300 million people to 500 million, and so we are. It allows us to punch in a way at a higher weight with more influence across the rest of the world. I think this has been a stabilizing force in Eastern Europe, and you see a number of countries in the Western Balkans, for example, wanting to be members because they think it would bring them a lot of prosperity and stability.
One final item I'd like to discuss, that's the cap. Can you tell me what it is and how it evolved in Europe?
The cap is the common agricultural policy. People just after the Second World War remembered that, you know, you had rationing of food and you had to have food stamps to buy any food product for a couple of years. And so the issue of food autonomy, in a way, was important in the 50s. You know, when the European Economic Community was founded in 1956, there were a number of pillars that were essential. One was coal and steel. Another one was agriculture. And so we needed to put together production of coal and steel, but also making sure that farmers would be producing the amount of food we needed. And so that's how it started, in a way, almost from a food sovereignty perspective, if you want, because trade in agriculture was much less important at the time than it is today. Now, it has evolved from a policy where we subsidized production. In the 80s, we had huge stocks of butter and milk products, and so we had to subsidize exports. That was distorting production in developing countries. That was really not a good outcome. And we've moved away from that. In 2004 and later, we've reformed our common agricultural policy. We've decoupled subventions, subsidies to farmers from production. And so therefore, now farmers get subsidies to do sustainable development, to maintain land, which is very important in many parts of Europe, and also to enhance animal welfare of animals they take care of. So we've been, it has also allowed our agriculture to become much more competitive. So our farmers are now more competitive than they were before, and so there's less need for protection, except in meat products in particular, but in cereals and other products, fruits and vegetables, we've become more competitive, and so we can open up also our markets to foreign competition more easily, and we are also an export superpower.
How large a part of the European Union budget is the agricultural portion of the budget?
I think it's around 40%, but it's mostly rural development subventions rather than agriculture as such. So with this, you would also subsidize and finance part of agri-tourism, so you people who do bed and breakfast in their farms to have a supplemental income, or other activities in rural areas, you would also get European subsidies for that.
Thank you, Damien, for being with us today.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you very much. And it's been fascinating to be here in New Berne, Champaign, and I'm sure I'll come back to the University of Illinois.
Thank you so much. Damien Levy is the first counselor, head of trade and agriculture sector for the delegation of the European Union to the United States of America. Just a bit about the way Europe works. Coal and steel and agriculture were all part of the way Europe came together after World War II, coal and steel, because they are the engines of war, and they wanted to control those across all of the nations, as opposed to allowing one nation potentially to be able to build and supply an army and agriculture, because Europe had starved during the wars, and they wanted to be sure that they would not do that in the future. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Empanada Day. Empanadas are made by folding a thick, circular-shaped dough patty over a stuffing, creating its typical semi-circular shape. Pastry is the traditional Latin version of the U.S. Hot Pocket. On this day in agricultural history in 1862, John D. Lindy of Philadelphia patented the first aerosol dispenser. In 1873, Alfred Paruff received a patent for the first commercially viable margarine manufacturing process, but he was a little too successful. When margarine sales threatened butter sales, state and federal officials levied taxes on margarine. In 1879, the Echo Farms Dairy of New York began selling milk in glass bottles, the first time that ever happened in the U.S. In 1898, the first U.S. College of Forestry was created at Cornell University. In 1911, Melvin Calvin was born. Calvin was an American biochemist who discovered how carbon dioxide is absorbed into green plants and its conversion into carbohydrates and other organic compounds. And in 1992, Benjamin Eisenstadt died. He invented the artificial sweetener Sweet'n'Low. When saccharin became popular in the 1950s, it was originally only available as a liquid or as tiny pills. Eisenstadt mixed saccharin with dextrose to create saccharin in a packet form. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from the Federal Reserve Building in Chicago. On the line is Eric Snodgrass. He's with AgriBolt to take a look at the weather forecast. Boy, kind of wet and cold and dreary, even a little bit of snow up here, or the beginnings of it. Eric, what do we have on tap for the weekend?
Yeah, so definitely. It's kind of a soggy day in parts of Illinois, northern parts of Illinois and Wisconsin and parts of Indiana as well. Kind of a mix of some rain and snow in that area. And after how warm March was, nobody really wants any of this. But unfortunately, we've got freeze warnings across Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and as far south as Kentucky, in Tennessee, and Missouri. And so we're talking a hard freeze here. This is below 28 degrees Fahrenheit. So we got to ask, is that normal? Well, I looked at Illinois data, and basically for southern Illinois, the first week of April is typically the last time of year for a hard freeze. So we're not too far off from that. Mid-April would be what we'd expect for central Illinois. Again, that's a hard freeze. And then northern parts, we're looking for the last week of April. So this isn't really that uncharacteristic. It's just been a really, really warm winter. So we don't want it, right?
Then what can we expect going forward?
Yeah, so basically we're going to have some precipitation moving into the area late Saturday night into Sunday morning. This being, you know, right here around Illinois. And we got a much larger system that's going to pull into the Central Plains from Kansas to Colorado. And what's going to be good about that is it's been really dry in the Central Plains. I don't know if you heard, but there's been quite a bit of fire activity across Oklahoma and Kansas. Now, some of these fires are still kind of burning uncontrollably. As of Friday, 90 square miles burned. So this will be some beneficial rain. And we're expecting that to kind of spread across Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio Sunday into Monday. But it looks like it'll be gone by Tuesday. And I guess the real thing that everybody wants to know about is, you know, when are we going to break out of this cold pattern? So I kind of did a little longer term forecasting just to take a look at that. And I see us staying in this pattern where there's general kind of a trough in the east. And troughs are basically cooler weather patterns in the jet stream with a ridge in the west. And that's warmer weather pattern that hangs around through mid-April, maybe April 15th. But the good news is looking longer term, I see a breakdown in that pattern. And I start to see some warmer air spreading to the east from the west. You know, really trying to bring our temperatures back up around here, you know, as we really look toward planting here in the Midwest. So while, you know, it started off with a very chilly and cold, beginning of April, it looks like the end of April is going to moderate. We're going to see some warmer temperatures very soon. So that's certainly going to be welcome. But I'll tell you, as we move toward that pattern, pretty repetitive in terms of the amount of and number of rainfall events, and maybe in the northern part, some snowfall events over the next several days. So that's kind of our short term blended with a little bit longer term outlook.
And finally, check in on California. They have been suffering dry weather for a very long time. They've had spits and spats of rainfall. Any more that's coming there?
Yeah, so Southern California is getting drenched. And they were getting drenched yesterday and then again today. And Northern California has been doing much, much, much better. Southern California has been very, very dry. But now we've got this precipitation moving in, and that's important. You know, we always have to keep an eye on California because they, they're leaders, number one in the nation for over 80 different crops and livestock. So we got to always keep an eye on what California is doing. And that drought is getting some help right now. So that's at least some good news for them.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah.
Eric Snodgrass is with AgriBolt, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media from the Federal Reserve Building in Chicago. I'm Yovi Extension's Todd Gleason.